One.
Arrgh, I'll bugger you where you sit, Link. Arrgh, I'll bugger you right here.
Arrgh.
On the high seas.
Arrgh.
Dog piss, I don't know.
Arrgh. Go Team Venture.
Arrgh.
There you go.
Team Venture. Welcome to the Linux League Tech Show. I got an echo. You hear the echo going on in here?
Echo.
No, you don't hear an echo. I hear it.
It's only in your head.
Yeah, it's from the one earphone echoing all the way through to the other earphone.
A little hollow space in between.
Episode 75, my birthday episode.
75.
That's
happy
right,
birthday
Sam.
To Dan.
Happy birthday to Dan.
Happy birthday.
Much better.
Yeah.
Oh, Danny boy.
Like bowling people over with the mic levels here. Oh, Danny boy, his ass is blowing.
I want the full version of that.
I'll sing it for you later.
Yeah.
Oh, Danny boy.
All right. We got a full show
and he's
tonight.
He's old now, too.
Yeah.
Is it like 33?
Yeah,
33. 34?
Dude, he's almost catching up to me. I'm just going to stop for a couple years.
He's the youngster.
Same age I am.
Alan's Grandpa Alan over
there.
We just call him Pops for short.
I got like two more weeks and it's mine.
Red Pop.
How old are you going to be, Alan?
42.
Are you born
in March, too?
I thought you were 40.
Were you born in March also?
April 1st.
Oh, April.
Yeah, that would
That's
be two more weeks from the March 16th, yeah. You know.
We have 14 days. There we go.
Woo!
All right, are we going to play some intro stuff before we get
that
into it?
Promo, whatever it is.
Let's do some stuff.
Do it. Are we still?
Which you almost didn't
guys.
Do.
It's Tom McFadden calling from Ontario, Canada, and I just wanted to say nothing rocks like the Linux Link Tech Show. Keep up the great work. Also, guys, I wondered if you guys had thought about maybe doing taking Skype calls or emails or something where a user would have a problem, say, with their wireless card in their Dell laptop, for instance. And if you guys would try and answer that on the air, or if you just wanted to steer right clear away from that type of idea. Just a thought. Keep up the good work.
Are you tired of when iPodder crashes or misses a podcast? Is iPodder X not powerful enough? Are you tired of the software not doing what you want it to do? Do you need a podcatcher that works on multiple platforms such as Linux, Mac OS X, AIX, and even Windows? Then try Bashpodder. Bashpodder does what you want it to do and when you want it. Bashpodder. It just works.
Hi, this is Kevin Devon, host and producer of the In the Trenches podcast. I'd like to take this opportunity to invite sysadmins everywhere to stop by and join in the fun. Each week, I go over some of the issues facing IT professionals and try to provide a little perspective on what it's like in the trenches. I usually wrap up the week with a scheduled tech chat, a roundtable-like discussion where three or four sysadmins discuss current events or a specifically scheduled topic. So what are you waiting for? Stop by and check it out today at kevindevon.com.
Yeah.
All right. That's our show for tonight. Thank
and
you very much.
It.
Good night, Bethlehem.
Good night, Cleveland.
Ta-da.
And in response to Tom McFadden was really cool and like sent us that the very first one that we played.
No.
He was real cool about that. Sent us into us asked, and in response to his question, you know, will we answer technical questions on the air?
Sure, why not?
No.
yeah,
you just, Dan will compile the question for
you. No, we have before, though, too, because, you know, we get people that ask us different stuff on IRC all the time, and many times we'll...
Qualify for our tech show portion.
Yeah, it qualifies for our technical portion where we just, you know, banter off and talk on that the whole time. And I don't see why it would be any different if someone could actually get a hold of us via Skype.
Nothing brings the show to a halt and flummox like we sit there trying to figure out an answer to them.
But it really doesn't matter because Dan can look it up real quick while he's compiling his code.
Download the WLAN links, WLAN G drivers, and edit your Etsy WLAN, WLAN comp file, and point it to the WLAN dash your sysid CFG. And
what he said.
Talk to you later.
Uh-huh.
That's a good one. You know, I want to start off by, again, thanking our wonderful mirrors. Not only the archive mirrors, you know, the live stream mirrors.
Yes.
MediaSysOp.Canada.
Not California, Canada, not California, right?
Canada.
WDSMN.com.
Yes, which is down for a couple of days. We got emails on that.
We did?
I think so,
You must have got the email.
I'm trying to get my email.
And, of course, BinRev.com, DDB Hack Radio. And for those of you who don't know, and I don't know if you listen to BinRev, but you'll hear about this a lot. They're actually, their service that they're putting together, they have this whole open source radio network service that they're just, it's kind of in beta right now, and it's working, obviously working very well. And they plan on releasing all that to the public as soon as they get it, you know, out of the beta stages. Well, I guess it's in more alpha than beta, I don't know. But I think that's really, you know, that's really great that they're contributing all that to the community.
Hooray!
So, you know, aside from listening to this show, give DDP Hack Radio, the shows on there, listen to too. You know, BinRev, Infonomicon, they're really great guys, put on some fantastic shows.
And make sure you listen to Lug Radio, too.
Yeah, well...
Even though
they're not on DDP Hack Radio.
Yeah, they're not. And they, you know, they gave us, like, they gave us shit on their last show, too.
They were goofing on Dan's voice.
Yeah, they were picking on you. They were picking on me. Oh, I don't know if it's picking on, because I don't watch Sex in the City. I think that's sort of a...
It's a girl show.
Yeah, it's a girly kind of show, and I understand that some of those guys
watches Sex in the City.
Yeah, I understand that some of those guys over Lug Radio like them girly kind of shows, so they know exactly who they're talking about because they said that like I sounded.
Some of them look like you, little girl.
Yeah. I sounded like one of the guys on there, and I don't know what they got with Dan. Hello.
How are you doing? This is Dan.
Hello, this is Dan. So,
I can't wait to listen. I thought you were going to play that.
I'm
one show behind.
I downloaded some stuff off of there to play off of the laptop, which is already connected. But the one thing I did want to mention, since they were picking on us about, you know, the way we talk and our voices and, you know, they keep getting the American comments. And, well, the American guys, how you doing? I just wanted to point out that if you do listen to Lug Radio, that indeed the one thing that you will notice is that they all talk at the same time. So even though they say they're working on it, they still...
Not like us.
Yeah. Not like us. No, not like us at all, because we have generally nothing to say. So.
Yeah,
because
you start talking, I start compiling, and Alan just...
Alan's trying to figure out what the hell you guys are doing.
Alan agrees with us. He just sits over there and goes, yep.
Do it. And you know
so what did you do this week, Alan? Nothing.
Work.
You know what?
That's why there's nothing on my blog, because I didn't do anything. I went to work. It's really boring.
A little word of advice, a little tip for those iRivers.
Yeah.
Don't leave them plugged into your USB port overnight. It sucks the battery dead. Yeah. I'm like, damn.
That's not
I was playing it on the way back from the recycling center today, and I was like, yeah, I was going. I only had it playing for like 45 minutes, and all of a sudden it just stopped, and I'm like, what the hell? And I pulled it out, and I looked at it,
like a 40-hour
and the battery was gone. I'm like, I just put this battery in yesterday. How could it be dead already? It's a rechargeable battery. I'm like, is the battery crappy? Or I'm like, oh, yeah, it was plugged into the USB port all night.
Oh,
because I remember pulling it off the port this morning.
Who else sent us mail?
I sent you mail.
Chris Ledoux. I think that's how you say his last name. You probably know who I'm talking about, don't you, Chris? Sent us mail, said he found our podcast through a post that Doc Searles left on his weblog. And he really enjoys it. And it's we're cool and everything.
Lies.
And, yeah, lies. Looks forward to more great content from our show. Well, thank you
very
much, sir.
That's why we have to have guests come on. Yep. So, yeah.
Thank you very much, sir. And I just would like to point out, for those of you who are catching this as a podcast, that is not the original intent. This is actually a live show. We do this live, webcast it live every week.
And we managed to set up at least 3 minutes before we start every day.
We managed to set up at least, in this case, it was at least 3 minutes after we were supposed to start tonight. But that's a different story. But now we do this live webcast every week. So that's why, you know, if we sound like crap, there you have it.
You may not sound like crap the next week.
Yeah, we don't edit it out or anything. This is just how it happens.
And
podcast is made available shortly thereafter the show.
Speaking of that, for all those people who have complained so much about the AUG files, not having AUG support, we have now added
yes.
a external USB Creative Lab Sound Blaster Live 24-bit, because that was too cheap to spring for the audio.
And it's a pretty little thing, too.
Right.
Almost the same size as Dan's laptop.
So you're going to get your better quality. It is, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I'm going to need a separate case to carry that around. Sure. So you're going to get your AUG file in the same, actually probably better quality than the MP3
right.
we put out.
Yeah,
it's about time.
But it still won't play on your iRiver.
Well,
that's unless you want
a 180 meg file.
Yeah,
right?
Unless you want maybe this way we'll be able to get. I don't know if
we
anybody
should just make a deal with iRiver, and then we could sell iRivers with the current
yeah.
you know with the current episode on them, and you know $100, and you could get the one episode of our show on there, and you could get the iRiver.
It would be you know, I don't know what it's great that they have AUG support, but. The bit rate that it has to
yeah,
be
that's,
at
that really
is just
limits it, man.
Incredible. And I guess that really doesn't matter for like a song file. They're only going to be like 5 to 8
yeah,
megs.
You, I was say, if you're
yeah,
only a couple minutes long, it's
yeah,
not a big deal.
Right, but we do, yeah, we do it.
So
now
I was encoding it, I'm like, oh, it's only 30% done, it's already at 50 meg. Like, it's not going to fly. No way. Can you imagine the complaints of that? We should get some really, really like
yeah,
popular
they were, yeah,
guests.
They were complaining about the 30 meg yeah. download. Can you imagine downloading a 180 meg file through
just to listen to us,
just for a podcast or something?
Yeah, we should get like Linus Torvalds on
yeah.
it. Like,
200 meg file.
Encode it and it'd be like 500 meg. It'd be like the size of a distro to download.
That would be funny.
Darn.
Okay, guys.
Are we ready for our guest?
Are we?
Is it that time again?
Dan, you got a question on the IRC there.
Dude.
Gorkon.
How does it work? There's a... what I had to do... This was kind of wonky. I'm not exactly sure how I got it to work. All I know is that it is... I have it on the PPC, so I'm sure it works a lot easier on the Intel architecture. But what I did is I tried booting it, my Ubuntu with it plugged into the USB, and it did detect it as a USB audio device, but it couldn't really use it. It was not picked up by ALSA, so I figured I had to mod probe in the Sound Blaster drivers, the EMU10K1 or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried that, and it still wasn't picking it up. So I removed everything, did the hot plug, restarted hot plug. It picked it all back up again, still wasn't able to use it. So I removed the drive, and then I don't know how. I think I left the Sound Blaster drivers mod probed in, and got rid of the Apple audio drivers. Plugged it back in, restarted the hot plug, and it just worked. Then after that, so I haven't shut it down since.
So, I haven't turned off the computer yet, have you?
Yeah, the problem is I'm running up against the Apple onboard audio here was what my main conflict was, that got detected first. So, of course, it was really weird. But after I got it all, unplugged it and did a couple funky things, it magically worked, and now I got it. So it does use the USB audio driver, but you also need to pull in the Sound Blaster EMU10K1 drivers, too. And then after that, it just was beautiful.
What he said.
I only have like an input and an output, You know, like when you get the USB, or most sound cards nowadays, you have all those different things when you fire up audio mixer, also mixer, like you have input one, or, you know, channel one, channel two, channel three, PCM, all this other crap. Well, this only has PCM and an input, you know, the mic, and that's all I have. That's it.
But apparently it works, and it's, you
know, it works.
Your little recording.
Hey, we're going to find out at the end of the show.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
That's
and if
the way
it doesn't, then you can
find out whether or not you get the OGG file or not.
Yeah. Well, I'm using Audacity because I'm very limited for space on this PowerBook here with regards to my Linux partition. So I got this 40 gig flash drive over here. It's not really a flash drive, it's a FireWire drive. And I figure that's going to be enough to hold an hour and a half show, right? 40 gigs.
You would think so.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I think like an hour of video takes up 2 gigs, so we should be good. Now, I've listened to some other podcast shows, and I've heard them talk about what file format Audacity saves in by default, and it isn't WAV. Audacity has its own format. So it's an AUP or AUD.
Yeah, it's a lossless format. Though.
Right,
yeah,
so it's not like WAV. A WAV file. You can export it as a WAV file, but by default it uses its own format.
Yes.
Unless that is a WAV, I don't think it's a WAV file.
I think it's very close.
And, I don't know, it's just, there's another podcast that I've listened to, BOSH, what is that? I got it off of podcast.net.
Never heard of it.
Bits of Silicon Hell. Have you listened to that?
No.
Nope.
That's a pretty interesting podcast. They had, I started listening to it because it was listed under the Linux
okay.
category, and
are
but
they lying?
I think they are because they have very little. all the shows I've listened to, they have very little talk about Linux. I think they're using Windows to do the recording.
You know, we've been accused of that as well. So,
I mean, the one was the guy talking about how he was developing this Access database.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then they were also talking about the Xbox. And but I think they're talking more about technology and that in regards, but they're listed under the Linux group. And I'm not saying I don't like them. I do. I think it's a great show. I enjoy listening to it. But it's not Linux. So still, this is Silicon Hell. It's interesting. I give it a listen. Getting better. They're getting a lot better. That's what I think. Yeah, I'm going to drink my Yingling now and let Alan talk.
I'm trying to find an article here that I really wanted to make a quick comment on. My wife told me as I was like getting ready to leave.
Oh, important news. Mozilla is dead.
Yeah.
Long live Sea Monkey, right? No, Seahorse.
Something like that.
No,
Sea something. Right?
Sea Monkey. Well, I guess Mozilla Foundation is going to stop the development of the integrated Mozilla project and continue on, which is Firefox, Thunderbird, and there's going to be Sunbird and NVU. NVU is handled by Linspire, and Sunbird is going to be the calendar.
Yes, here it is. There's an article on Slashdot that I know you guys probably didn't see, and I didn't see it either. My wife read it to me. Article on Slashdot says, EDS, Linux is insecure and unscalable. Okay, large enterprises should not use Linux because it is not secure enough, has scalability problems, and could fork into many different flavors, according to the Agility Alliance. you can love this.
The
Agility Alliance is saying this.
Who's that?
And look and see who it is. It includes IT heavyweights such as EDS, Oracle, Cisco, Microsoft, Sun, Dell, and EMC. None of those people have ever supported Linux, really. You know what I mean? So, like, what a shocker for Microsoft
and Sun and Dell
to say that Linux is insecure and unscalable. Not that they would have, like, asked somebody who would know, like, IBM or something about Linux's scalability or something like that. Give me a freaking break. You know what I mean?
IBM has Linux running on their mainframe. It doesn't scale much better, bigger than that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, if they're, you know, if they're running it on a 120 processor mainframe, it's pretty much scaled out pretty well, you know. And Microsoft calling another product is insecure. That just kills me. If that's not the classic example of the pot calling the kettle black, I don't know what it is. Yeah. But I had to mention that.
So we're ready to call Warren?
That was too good to pass up. Yes. That's yes. And did we even tell anybody on the air who we're talking to?
Yes, we did.
It was on the...
I wasn't paying attention.
On the blog.
I know it was on our blog, but did we actually say...
I don't think we've told anybody tonight yet.
Well, we misspelled Mepis. On the blog, we spelled it.
No, there's no we here.
Who was it?
I didn't type it on there.
I didn't type it either.
You got to wonder, is it really misspelled, or did I do that purposely to see if anybody watched
it? People noticed.
I wanted to see. I'm sticking with the latter. That's the you know, the latter, not the former.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, you're not with your...
Yeah, well, at any rate, we are actually...
Penn State! Right?
No. Go Bucks!
Should we,
Give a dial there, Dave.
Give a dial. Mm-hmm. Give a ling-a-ling.
We're going to be speaking to Warren Woodford.
Yes. See, I don't know if it's a good thing. My Audacity window disappeared. It's all grayed out. Like, and I see my CPU seems to be doing all right, but...
Cool. Well, we're gonna try and get a hold of Warren Woodford. He's the founder and developer of Mepis Linux.
What?
Dan, are you having problems?
No, I'm just
except
trying
for
to
Dan
see.
Is like doing some kind of something.
I'm just making sure I'm trying to see if we're still recording. I don't know if we are on the USB. Maybe we're a little too premature.
Humming.
Any excitement?
I told you to use Resound, man.
No! Oh. I think it froze.
See, you got to use Razan. Razan is better.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Another Razan week of shitty Og.
Better.
Og waits another week.
Yes, we'll get this worked out somehow. Oh, I can't believe it just froze.
Sean on IRC says he's using Mepis right now.
All right, then. Yeah. Here we go. Ready to fire it away?
Let's talk in a minute.
Yeah, well, we've been ready, man. You've been over there, like, you know, picking your butt or something. Says he's ringing. I don't hear a thing.
I don't hear it either.
You never do.
Hey, guys.
Warren.
Third down your stereo.
Yeah, hi.
How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great.
I take it you can hear us all right. It's our standard question.
I'm hearing you guys fine.
That's all good. Right. We're getting you pretty well, too. I just pulled on your level a little
good.
Bit. All right. So, you are, sir, the founder and developer of Mepis Linux, right?
That's an interesting question. I like to call it Mepis, actually.
All right, well, that was going to be my second question.
Yeah,
is it Mepis or Mepis? Mepis it is.
It's Mepis.
How
is it Linux or Linux or Linux?
Linux. How'd you come up with that name, by the way?
How'd you come
well,
up
with that? Well, that's really a bit of a story. I have a colleague whom I've known for a very long time, and we were going to start a software business in France in 2000. And we were talking on the phone about a name for the company, and he kept saying to me that we should call the company Mepis. And I kept thinking he said Mepis. And he kept saying, look on look on Google, and you'll see lots of references to it. And I kept saying, I'm looking on Google and I can't find any reference. This is a great name for a company. Anyway, that didn't happen, but I grabbed the name.
Uh-huh.
And that's the real story.
The real story. So it's not really named after Mepis.
Which is not to be confused with the one that I made up when I... Huh?
You didn't name it after Memphis.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
It's not named after Memphis. There's a story going around that it was named after the city of Memphis.
That's right. I actually made up a mythology about it when I started a distro. And the mythology was that the original logo for Memphis was a modified glyph of Thoth, the Egyptian god. And I claimed that Thoth, who is known for bringing the sciences and writing and things like that to the ancient Egyptians, was actually Tux.
Okay.
And that this is just a new incantation, or this is just, you know, the Tux today is just a new version of Thoth, and that therefore this was called, that explained the logo, and then that the name of the company, you know, the name of it being Memphis was really a variation on the name Memphis, which was the center of the administration of ancient Egypt, where all that technology was put to use. So I just made that up.
Works for us.
And then I got in trouble for it.
What kind of trouble did you get in for that one?
Nobody's going to ask me why I would get in trouble for doing
that's
that.
That's what we're trying to figure out.
No, we're just going.
Huh?
Yes. What kind of trouble did you get into? Why would you even get into trouble for that?
I got in trouble because there are some people in the world who feel that if you name something, if you create a mythology about a product that relates to an Egyptian god, that you're anti-Christian.
Okay. That would have been the last thing I would have thought of there, but that's okay.
People need to go.
We don't really want to go there any further.
No. Let's leave it at that.
Dun, dun, dun.
So it's basically a Debian-based distro, correct?
So anyway.
It is a Debian.
Yes, it is. It's Debian-based. I'm afraid you guys are breaking up a little bit. I'm not hearing everything you're saying.
It's a bit of a lag, I think.
Well, maybe we should hang up and dial again and see if we get a different way.
We're going to hang up and dial you right back, because that might improve the connectivity, okay?
We might have a little bit of a bad connection going on.
We'll call you right back, okay, Warren?
Okay.
Let's try it again.
Brief musical interlude.
Okay.
My USB died.
Wait.
A
little bit of a lag, ladies and gentlemen.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, I think this is the worst lag.
Yeah, but there was no lag going the other way. I mean, he was coming through.
Hey.
There we go.
Is that better?
Yeah, I'm hearing you guys okay now. It's not breaking up.
All right, good.
Yeah, you were coming through great, though, before.
Good.
Yeah, we heard you fine. It's just that when we talked, it took like, you know, I think you had a real lag over on that end.
But yeah, actually, I think it was. Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily a lag, but just that it was breaking up and I wasn't hearing you at all. And so I didn't know if you guys were responding to anything I was saying or what.
Now, as long as you can hear us now, this is much better, because we still have a pretty good connection with you.
I'm hearing you just fine now.
Great. There you go. So what can you tell us about Memphis?
That's a really open-ended question. I guess first of all, I did it because I wasn't satisfied with the other distros, and I'm a I just wanted something that worked, and I never did find anything that really satisfied me, and had the audacity to think that I could do something better, or at least something I would like. And so I created this thing and threw it out there to see what would happen, and more people came along and liked it. And at this point, it seems that a lot of the people who like Mepis are people who have never used Linux before, and particularly people who are categorized as not being potential users of Linux. There's an awful lot of retired and semi-retired people who are taking to it because they wanted something other than Windows, and they want something that's easy to install and get started with. And so it's very, very interesting because I hear from people all the time that they're getting it, they like it, and now they're installing it on their sons or grandsons or whatever computer.
That's great.
So it's kind of the opposite.
It's been one of those really long weeks, and I so wanted to try your distribution out this week and never got a chance. However, what I can say is the last time that I went home for a visit, my father has Mepis installed on his computer. And that really surprised me because he's been a diehard Windows user for a long, long time. And I remember wanting to check my email, and I walked in there, and I was greeted by a KDE desktop, which I thought was really cool, you know? So that impresses me right off the bat.
Well,
and you did that without your help, though.
Right. He didn't call me or anything. He just walked in, and there it was, you know?
Well, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to build something that, you know, just everyday people can use it and can get away from Windows. And, I didn't really build something I didn't build something that was aimed at sysadmins or whatever, really. I built something that was aimed at everyday people. And the kind of thing that I would use, and my background includes being a software developer, and so, you know, for the basic CD doesn't include that, but I rely on KDevelop and the Qt for development, and I think it also makes a really good platform for doing real honest-to-God software development, like you would do if you were working for some, you know, in the IT department of some corporation where you're building custom apps or something like that. And, I think, obviously Linux is great for that, particularly, with Qt. I'm a big Qt fan. But I think that if you're in that kind of a situation, you also don't want to be having to figure out how to install the OS. You just want to get on to building, writing software, creating something new, not reinventing the foundation.
Well, it seems to be working because Mepis is number two on the DistroWatch list for the past month.
Yeah, we hit number one right before Ubuntu really, just captured the universe with their incredible marketing. And obviously there are people who really like it, but I'd say they are putting a ton of effort into marketing. Hardly a day goes by without a press release or something from them. And I don't begrudge them that. I think they're really, really smart about how they're doing that. But I also think they're probably going after a different category of people than Mepis, so I don't think we're going to be butting heads much.
Well, there's enough room in the Linux world for everybody, I think. You know, the distros that are geared towards the more experienced users and the distros that are geared towards the newbies. I think there's a little bit of everything for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But there's nothing
I agree with that.
So sit down.
Now, do you see yourself having any actually competing against any other distro, or are you just out to do your own thing and make it work the way that you like it?
Well, I don't think those two things necessarily go together or contradictory each other. The fact is, Memphis was created to be what I personally would like, and also, of course, I want other people to like it because it makes me feel good to hear that other people use it and they like it.
Evidently, your idea of what you like is a popular idea because, if I'm correct, Memphis is the only distribution that has a fan site?
That is, well, I don't know about that. We certainly do have what one could call that, MemphisLovers.com,
right,
which is an independent forum mostly beginners. And, the person who started it and a lot of people who, I mean, certainly there are a lot of people who talk to me about Memphis, and I can't help but categorize them as fans because they're very enthusiastic. They really, really like it, and they say so. But, I think there are people who really like other distros, but I'm not sure that they express it in quite the same way. I don't think Memphis is the only one that really, I mean, maybe Memphis is the only one who actually has a place called Something Lovers. I mean, that's kind of extreme, I think. But
right, well, that's what I was
kind of gratifying
to. They're yelling at me on IRC chat now because there's Debian Planet and stuff like that. But that's a little bit different.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
That's a little. That's not like DebianLovers.com, you know, or DebianLovers.com, or there's no SlackwareLovers.com, but there's Memphis Lovers.
I bet you there's a Slackware Sucks, isn't there?
Probably, but that's a whole different story.
But I'd like to get back to that question of does Memphis see itself competing with anybody? Because, I mean, I have big hopes for Memphis. I'd like for lots and lots of people to be using it, and I'd like for it to become a bigger and bigger thing. And, I have aspirations. It's not...
Well,
I thought originally that if Memphis ever made it to number 6 on DistroWatch, that I would have it would be a big success. I mean that I would feel like I had accomplished something.
Well, the reason the reason I asked you that question is because I noticed when I was looking around the web real quick, a lot of places that mention doing distribution reviews and things like that of Memphis compare it and contrast it to, Zandros, I think. And I was wondering if that's like the same market segment or something that you're trying to reach.
It's not. Well, I don't know who Zandros is trying to reach, actually. I have my own slanted opinions perceptions about Zandros, and
well, great.
I don't really know what
them.
They're trying to do. I got a phone call today from a fellow who uses Memphis, and he told me something that I found to be very shocking, but it sounds like it's true. He recently got a machine from Walmart that came preloaded with Zandros, and when he tried to replace Zandros with Memphis, the Microtel machine the Microtel machine has code in the BIOS that's preventing him from installing any other OS.
That's crazy. I've never heard of that.
Well, I've heard of it with Windows. Microsoft was trying to do deals like that two or three years ago, if you bought an HP desktop machine and tried to install Linux, you would have a dickens of a time. It was that period of time when desktop machines tended to not let you have access to the BIOS at all. And then they were doing these things where, for example, there would be a special recovery partition. And if you deleted the special recovery partition, then the system would not boot at all. And there's just a lot of weird stuff that Microsoft was doing 2 to 3 years ago. And this really reminds me of that. Now, I haven't seen the machine, and I don't know the end of the story. So I don't know absolutely that that's what Microtel did, but it sure did sound like it. Because he would try to install Memphis, And then this little panel would pop up that did not look like KDE or anything like that, that would tell him that he had to enter his Zandros registration key to continue while he was in the middle of running off a CD doing an install of Mepis. And I don't know where that could have come from if it didn't come from BIOS. But, yeah, I think that's really a ridiculous thing for anybody to do if it's true. I can't guarantee that that's actually true, but it sure sounded like it. And it sounds like the kind of thing that, you know, that really somebody is shooting themselves in the foot if they do something like that. But I've got a few of those, you know, shoot yourself in the foot stories right now. I wonder how's the SUSE community going to feel about SUSE becoming Novell Linux with GNOME? Or will SUSE spin off as a community project now? Who knows? I think a lot of it is that people like companies like that are just trying to figure, they're now still trying to figure out what to do, which way to go.
So, does your distro have its own repository for packages that people who have the OS installed on their system can hit for upgrades and install new applications?
Yeah. Mepis has a repository that that supersedes the Debian repository for special items. But the Debian repository is the base. And quite frankly, I feel like this is a good time to mention that none of this would be possible if it wasn't for Debian and for the people who do the incredible work in the Debian project. Mepis is really built on top of their work. And to some, you know, and also on top of the work done by the KDE project. And I like to leave them right in there and acknowledge them for what they do. And I know that some other distros don't do that.
My question is, if you have the Debian repositories listed in your apt-get sources list file, and you do a dis upgrade, will it break the system?
Well, if you do with Simply 3.3 is built against unstable. Now, dis upgrade can mean different things, depending on what you're upgrading. We had a problem because last year's Simply was built against testing. And then adventuresome people would change the default distro to unstable, and then they would do a dist upgrade, and that would break things. But now it should not, because there's no place to go from unstable unless somebody goes to experimental. And I guess one could try to downgrade, and that would be a whole different thing. But the way that the pinning is set up in apt, the Mepis repository packages will supersede the Debian repository packages when that's important. And that also gives us the ability, if we discover that something gets broken in the Debian repository, which can actually happen for a week or two at a time, if we discover that, we can actually do a temporary override and pin that package to the version that's in our pool, a version that we know is good.
Hey, Warren, there's a question on the IRC chat from Tin. He wants to know what paid access gets you on your website.
I'm sorry, what?
Tim wants to know, what does paid access get you on your website?
That gives you access to our FTP servers, which always have the latest things that we're doing. Now, there are times where weeks go by and we don't have anything new, and at that point I can understand a person might say, hey, I'm not getting anything. But it's more like, in a way, it's, you know, if you want to download Memphis and get the absolute latest version, then you could get it for free from a public site, or you could get it from the Memphis site. Obviously, if you're getting it from the Memphis site and you subscribe, then you're helping to, you know, to pay for the development of Memphis, and I certainly appreciate that. That way, I can pay the rent. And but also, if you get a version, if you get it now, and we're working on something new, like the next release, and it's in. I don't use the term alpha or beta anymore because it's so misunderstood, or release candidate, because I found that among users it's so misunderstood what that means. People will take a beta and assume that it's a final. So basically what we do now is we call it test. Either it's test or it's not test. And so when we have test versions, then people who are subscribers get early access to the test versions. And certainly if you're really anxious to get the latest version when it comes out ahead of anybody else on your block, then if you're a subscriber, you're going to get access to it a little bit sooner. But anybody who doesn't, you know, anybody who wants to use Memphis, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but anybody who wants to use Memphis but doesn't want to support the Memphis project or the Memphis company or the me or whatever, is totally free to download it from a public mirror. And all they have to do is wait maybe a day or two or three extra to get that if it's something that's being released. And if it's an early test version, then, you know, they don't get to do that.
Right. We also have a couple questions about whether or not you're planning to support any other architectures.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's a matter of resources. We've had a lot of requests for Athlon 64, and we've had a fair number of requests for PowerPC. And so those are the two that are at the top of our list.
Any idea when we really might be seeing some development on those fronts?
Well, I don't really know because it is a matter of resources, and you know, at the moment the resources are not available to do that. And if they're, I mean, they could be available a month from now, and we could get started. And I'd certainly want. We've had a lot more requests for Athlon 64, and obviously that's a, you know, a, for the future, a more and more important one to do. The ones for PowerPC always surprise me, but I'm pleasantly surprised. So, you know, we don't have any firm plans because we don't have spare resources right now to allocate to it. If we get the resources, or, you know, whether it's people resources or money resources to get people, then we'll get right on it.
PPC first. Trust me.
Link's a big PPC first.
PPC first, trust me.
Okay, everybody raise their hands who wants PowerPC. Now everybody raise their hands who wants Athlon 64.
PPC first. Listen, listen, everybody in the world is putting something out for Athlon 64, and everybody in the world is charging, except for Ubuntu, is charging for their PPC distribution. So you'll be right in with it. And with how nice you make your desktop, since everybody says your desktop is the greatest thing, it would just be it would be a wonderful thing to have your desktop on a PPC system. That's what I'm saying.
Well, there's another thing that you know, that most people don't know. I'm an ex-Nexty.
Aha. There you go.
And so
PPC system actual evolution. There you go.
Yeah, but you know, I would say that what I did with Memphis for ease of use, desktop, and things like that was certainly heavily and was probably, you know, I'm sure it was influenced by the years that I spent doing work in the Next environment. I got involved with Next in '89. And as late as 96, I was deploying Next Step on PC on Intel.
Mm-hmm.
systems for hospitals in the Bay Area. So I was just about the last person in the world to stop using it for real-world deployments of stuff. I was consulting in those days.
Outstanding. So is that what you do now? Are you still consulting, or...
No, I'm broke.
You're broke.
Join the club.
I'm doing MEPFIS and trying to make a go of it, really. The kind of consulting that I did was not available after Y2K because companies couldn't afford it anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's starting to come back now, and to be quite frank about it, I see three possible futures here. One, bootstrap MEPFIS, which is what I'm doing now, sort of along the lines of the Peter Norton model, although I haven't given much attention to the marketing side of it. And, I just simply haven't. And that could work out. Or get funding. And, oh, by the way, there were venture capitalists at the Boston show, and they were talking about MEPIS, about Linux or Linux or whatever the hell it is, as if it's the Linux. They were talking about Linux as if it is going to be the next big thing.
It said the next big thing. It's already the big thing. It's been the big thing.
No, for years. No, it's the next big thing. It becomes the next big thing when Sand Hill Road puts $2 billion worth of funding into Linux startups. Uh-huh. Not for distros, for applications, for new kinds of businesses nobody ever thought of before, for the things that Linux becomes the foundation for. And I think this is where a lot of people are missing the boat right now in how they view what Linux is. The days of thinking of it as distros is coming to an end, period. It just is. There's going to be a shakeout, and there's going to be a few people left, and there's going to be a lot of people who are not real, who are having fun, doing their thing, but it's going to go big time. And it's going to go big time not as there being everybody in the world doing distros. It's going to be people are going to be building open source applications that run on Linux that are really the kind of applications that the corporate world wants. People are going to build new applications for the desktop that have never been done before because you can't do that in Microsoft. And I can tell you right now from my next days and stuff I invented then,
you mean like
that a lot of that is
going to
be, it's going to be collaboration and peer-to-peer type things like nobody's hardly ever seen before. And that stuff's going to be possible because only Linux gives you the openness to do those kind of things. That's what's going to be happening next. That's what Sand Hill Road is which is in Palo Alto. That's where the big bucks come from in Silicon Valley. Those venture capital firms are going to put money into companies like that. They're never going to put money into a single distro. They're going to put money into companies that build the next big ERP application, or whatever, some business-to-business application, or something that every person on the planet has to have on their desktop, but it's never been done before. And it doesn't matter whether those really happen or not. Every time somebody comes along with a big idea like that, as soon as they say this is the next big thing, then they're going to invest in companies like that. And that's going to make Linux the big winner. And that's going to make Microsoft the 20% company.
Where do you see your distro going in the next couple of years?
Well, that really depends on whether it keeps doing well bootstrapping. It depends on whether, in spite of what I just said, MEPFIS gets funding, which would certainly move things forward quickly because I've thought about that and there's possibilities of that, and quite frankly, I know exactly what I could have 40 full-time employees doing tomorrow. And I'm not talking about software development for the most part. I'm talking about the things that are needed so that people who are using something like this have the kind of support that they need and documentation, and so that there's the things there so people can be building applications on top of it and doing bigger and better things, and where it's just the foundation that everybody can use. And, I don't know if that'll ever happen. If, maybe it will, maybe it won't. I'll be happy either way because, that's not a big priority for me. And then also maybe some other distro will really just capture the whole thing and I won't be able to make a go of it with Mepis. And I don't think that's going to happen, but it could. And I know where I'd like for it to be in 2 years. And you heard it first here. Where I would like for Mepis to be in 2 years is I would like for Mepis to be the Apple of the Linux world. I would like for Mepis to get better and better and better and blow everybody away and become the one that everybody wants instead of Microsoft.
That's a good
goal.
That's
what I'd like.
It's pretty grandiose.
It's a good goal, though.
Yeah.
Warren, how many other developers besides yourself are working on Mepis?
None.
Oh, that's a pretty ambitious job you're doing there. That's great. Do you find it difficult to keep up?
It's impossible to keep up. I do have some help, but not with coding, but I do have some help. And I'm getting more people are showing up who want to help. Unfortunately, it's been slow finding people who want to do things. Like there's a person who wants to help out with marketing now, which has never happened before. And there's a fellow, Matt Melbert, who's here in the sort of in the Morgantown area, who's just a jack of all trades, but he has a day job, so he doesn't have that much time available. But he's taken up a lot of the slack on support emails and stuff like that, and helping out with the servers and testing things and stuff like things of that sort. And and obviously there are people in the community who help each other a lot, and that just makes a huge difference. And there's the Mepis Forum, which is kind of a loosely run confederation of Mepis users, but certainly near the, one of the leading people there is Dr. Liz from Australia. I don't actually know Liz's last name. And then there's the Mepis Lovers Forum, where that's run by Donna South. That really helps out. And there's a techie group that started up recently called .mepis.org, run by Josh King, and he's just trying to figure out how to have something that's really for the more techie type community that wants to build new kernels and things like that. Do the unofficial kind of stuff.
So now, do you, is there anything, one of the questions that came across the chat was, what would be holding anybody back from contributing? Are you guys pretty open to people contributing to Mepis? Or do you like
well,
to keep
I
it a
that, that's a really multi-edged sword type of question, because I've had a number of people ask if they could contribute. And, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention that there's a guy who's done some of our graphics, who I certainly should acknowledge. His name's Devin Boyd, and that's been really great too. But there have been people who have said they wanted to contribute, but when I ask them what they want to do, they tend to not have an answer. And there is one thing about Mepis that I think is somewhat misunderstood. There is very little code in Mepis. It's not a matter of code. It's a matter of style.
Hmm. Okay.
So what is it that makes it different? Is it besides, you know, the easy install?
Yes.
Is it the maintenance of the packages and the way the system's integrated with the different applications?
It's essentially art. It's taking the pieces that anybody could take and putting them together in a specific way. I mean, literally, that is what it is. And every single thing that Memphis does, you could go out and do it with open source tomorrow and duplicate every single thing that's there.
For instance, KDE, I mean, I'm assuming you have your own customized version of it. How customized is it?
Well, the only things that have been done to it, which are, by the way, sitting there for anybody to see, all you people out there who are listening who say I don't give out the source on this stuff, it's scripts. It's config files. It's in there. All you have to do is go look at it.
Look in the right place.
With KDE, there are app name RC files for the apps that configure the apps. Well, you just tweak the configuration if you want it to be easier to use than the way it comes from the KDE project. And the menus, you redesign the menus by creating an XML file that's completely standards based. That's really all that's been done there is package selection, modifying the XML files that define the menu layout, and tweak a few, just a very few, of the KDE app RC files.
Well,
I mean, it's...
I'm going to check it out.
Go ahead.
I'm really curious now. I really want to see it. So I have a spare machine. I'm going to install it, and I'm going to check it out. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it in the future.
So when's the next... do you have a new release coming out soon?
There will be a release coming out. I fumbled around last fall with where do I go from here? What do the people really want? And after doing a bunch of fumbling, I decided that what people really want is, or what will work for an awful lot of people, is the bootable CD, the Simply CD, and then some extra CDs that are time-synchronized with the release of that CD, as opposed to the moving Debian pool, which can get you in trouble sometimes. And that from that, people could customize, use the Simply CD as a foundation. A lot of people just use that, and that's all they need. People who are more advanced could then either use the extra CDs, or they can get what packages they want from the Debian pool, or updates of things that we have, that have been done in the Memphis pool, or the Memphis specific components. And Simply Memphis 3.3 was released a few weeks ago. And in figuring all this out, I said, okay, we did a version where GNOME and KDE were both present. People in the GNOME community ignored it, didn't hear a thing about it. It's as if they didn't care. So I said, okay, well, that's a lot of space, and I could really use that space, and it's more complicated to maintain all that. So we're going to have, we're going to go back to the way it used to be. Simply Memphis is going to be KDE-based. You can install GNOME very easily, and there's a little bit of pre-configuration so that it has, so it's Memphis-themed a little bit if you install GNOME, but that's up to you. You want GNOME, you install it. The bootable CD comes with KDE only. And since we're doing that, and every time that there's a release of KDE, people say, oh, got to have that new KDE in Memphis, we may as well synchronize the release of Memphis with the releases of KDE. So, Simply Memphis 3.3 was late getting out because this decision was made a lot later than it should have been. And it's based on KDE 3.3, or uses KDE 3.3. So obviously now that KDE 3.4 is becoming available, there will be a Simply Memphis 3.4. And I'm guessing that that'll come out around the 1st of May.
Cool.
So what else? From there on out, we'll...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that from there on out, Simply Memphis, I expect, will be synchronized with KDE per release cycle. So when a new KDE comes out, maybe a month later, a new Memphis will come out. Certainly not going to come out immediately because I've used KDE long enough to know that when a new KDE comes out, there's a better version a month later. So, certainly wouldn't want to come out with a KDE 3.4 based version this week. But anyway, so around the 1st of May, I expect 3.4 will become available. We have two extra CDs right now that we're ready to put out for testing to go with the 3.3 version. When 3.4 comes out, we'll have a 3.4 version of those extra CDs. We also anticipate that we'll have a printed user's guide for 3.4, which up until now we haven't had. Right now in the middle of revamping the websites and configuring them so it'll be easy to add more documentation and things that will allow us to get feedback from users. For example, there's a thing just started this week that doesn't have much content in it yet, but it's a section of the .org site called Troubleshooting. And, it's the beginnings of doing a knowledge base, but in a way where basically you look things up by subject and then by the bug, by the error that you're getting. And, for example, if you look under sound problems and then you look under the page that talks about if KDE reports that DevDSP is not present, then that means your driver didn't get loaded. And if your driver didn't get loaded, that means that the auto detection didn't automatically load your driver. And there's a form right there. If you fill out the form with some information, then your audio chip can be added to the hardware database and then published out to everybody, and then Memphis gets better. But that kind of troubleshooting, problem-solving, and feedback mechanism all working together in the website is the thing, the thing that we're putting together now and we're going to be adding on to, that I think that will give us a feedback mechanism of the type that the corporate world calls a continuous quality improvement mechanism. So those are the kind of things that we're working on to for the near future. And and then obviously, as I've said, for the we do want to do an Athlon 64 version, a PowerPC version. And it's a matter of resources, and clearly if there were some people who wanted to work on those and philosophically got along with me, quite frankly, I guess, just the fact of the matter, then we could do that. We could do that sooner instead of later if some people want to work on it.
All right.
And then I'll throw out a couple other things since I'm throwing out things. I can't name names yet, unfortunately. Memphis is probably going to be bundled with some laptops within the next two or three months, but I can't say anything about the brands.
Oh, that's good, though.
Fantastic.
We'll keep an eye out for it.
That's great. That is really great. When do we
well,
expect
it's
that?
Not a done deal. It's not a done deal, so that's why I can't name names yet. And but hopefully it'll happen.
So besides working on Memphis, what do you like to do? Like, what do you spend a lot of your time doing?
Sleeping. That's really, you know, this is pretty much it. Now there are things I'd like to be doing, but I don't have time for them. And frankly, here in Morgantown, I've never had much of a social life since I moved here. So
it's a pretty town, though, isn't it? They had an article in our local newspaper about Morgantown, West Virginia, and supposedly it's a very nice town.
It's very nice, and it gets recognized as being one of the most livable small cities in the U.S. And there are some things here that, you know, just regular amenities that I really like. For example, there's a coffee roaster here that is the best coffee roaster I've ever found in the U.S. There's a microbrewery that's perhaps one of the 10 best microbreweries in the U.S. It's kind of surprising.
Well, that alone makes you want to come visit.
And we got a few things like that. We don't have any restaurants to speak of. On the other hand, there were a lot of Italian immigrants who, you know, settled here 100 years ago. So we have pretty good selection of Italian groceries just in the regular grocery stores.
That's nice.
So if one wants to cook Italian at home, there's no problem with doing that here. And, of course, there's beautiful scenery and parks to go to. And in the summertime, there's two or three festivals or events or something every weekend here. There's always things to do. I don't mean just in Morgantown, but throughout West Virginia as a whole, there's always some place you can go and different things that you can do just about every weekend. You know, a lot of it related to nature or to, you know, to cooking or to some kind of thing that is, you know, that is indigenous here, like berries or vegetables or whatever.
Now, you're not originally from Morgantown, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm originally from the other side of the state.
Okay, and, so you are from...
left what? When I was... Yeah, I'm a native West Virginian, but I left when I was 17 to go to work for AT&T as an engineer.
And you don't still work for AT&T, do you?
I haven't worked for AT&T for, oh, gosh, 35 years?
Wow.
All right, I'd say no then,
right?
Sound
right.
That would be a no, yeah.
Wow.
I've been in a lot of places since AT&T.
Yeah, well, that's you haven't worked at AT&T for longer than I've been alive, so
that's very possible.
That would be no, yeah.
Hey, you look awful young.
Yes, I was.
I figured you to be like 35.
I do.
Yeah, your picture there. I think I met you at the Boston Linux World Expo.
Well, I was certainly there, and. Where are you seeing my picture?
On Skype. Unless that's not you.
Oh, do I have my picture? Oh, I guess I do have my picture.
Yeah.
Maybe I did put my picture on that.
Yeah, it must be all that West Virginia living.
Well, that picture is actually about 5 years old, I think, or close to it. It's from about, you know, maybe 4 years old.
Huh.
But, yeah, I have pretty good genes.
There you go. Awesome.
Well, my father was 61 when I was born.
Wow.
he had good genes, too.
Regular Anthony Quinn. Tony Randall.
Wow. So now, I know we touched on this before. You said you're broke. You're not actually working aside from doing Memphis right now.
That's correct. That's right. I haven't worked since the bubble burst.
Okay. Wow.
Well, actually, that's not totally true because back before the bubble burst, I had a consulting firm and I had a master contract with Ernst & Young, and I just remembered in 2001 they realized that finally they had a problem with the software that we'd done for them. The calendar didn't go perpetually into the future. The calendar pop-up. So while getting the calendar pop-up taken care of for another 10 or 20 years, they actually asked for some improvements at that time on that software. So actually I did have a consulting gig then. But nothing like the good old days.
Wow.
However, I predict for those people out there who are thinking, what does Linux mean for them, that we're going to have some good new days in the future, and people are going to want stuff done in Linux. And so all you guys out there who are Microsoft developers wondering, I'm warning you right now, you really ought to start jumping ship or getting ready for it, because it's coming. And it's going to be, it's going to really be a good situation for the people who get there first.
So now, Warren, you must make a little kickback on Memphis. It's such a popular distribution, so you should be making some money off of that. Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's good.
Oh yeah, I do make some money off of it because enough people either buy CDs or they buy subscriptions or things like that. I actually can make a living out of it right now, but I can't build a. I don't. It's not doing well enough to build anything really, really big out of it.
Uh-huh.
I can't afford to have people come on board as full time employees or anything like that. And the kind of things that a lot of what needs to be done is not the kind of stuff that apparently the open source community traditionally does, because I'm not talking about development work mostly. I'm talking about the other things like marketing and tech support. Obviously the people in the community who go to the forums, they provide tech support for people, but there are people who want more than that, too. There are people who would like to have somebody talk them through their first installation just so they feel comfortable with it. So instead of having people do that, I try to figure out how to make the installation be totally, automatic.
Oh. All right, Warren, we're going to have to close this interview because we're running out of time. We have to stop before 10 o'clock. But I really want to thank you for coming on and thank you for your Memphis distribution. There's a lot of people who love it. Link's dad loves it, is using it, and it's just really great that you're doing this. And maybe you can come back. I was going to say maybe you can come back on your show, our show, a little closer to your release. In a few months and hopefully come on with some news about it being shipped with laptops.
Yeah. Come back on and give us the update as to what kind of new goodies you're sending out with the next release.
Well, the next release, the main thing is that we're syncing up with the next KDE, so it'll be just a resynchronization with the latest stuff. The latest of everything, and we'll be looking at the new features in KDE 3.4 and see if there's anything special that can be done with those. One thing I was kind of disappointed about was that, on the one hand, it's really good that, and I'm glad that there are some features from OS X that are going into KDE 3.4. The bad news is that apparently Apple is in no way supporting that happening. It's just that it's open source code, so the KDE guys are taking it upon themselves to add things like Rendezvous into KDE. I was actually hoping that it would be more of a coordinated effort. So I don't even know if Rendezvous in KDE 3.4 is going to actually work with in a mixed environment with Macs running OS X. I think, you know, it'd be incredibly cool if it did, but I don't know if it will. And, you know, Rendezvous is actually the successor to a technology that was called Services that I was using in 1991. So I know things to do with that if it were available. But, you know, that kind of stuff, we won't be able to do anything probably right away with it in 3.4. But with new features like that in KDE, we're going to be looking at what can be done with it. What can be done to do, you know, where's there something that can be done that would be cool that it just so happens other people aren't doing yet? We tried to do the same thing with iPod. As far as I know, Memphis is the only distro where, at least if you're running, this doesn't work as well with a 2.4 kernel, but if you're running the 2.6 kernel, you can plug in either a Mac or a PC iPod, and it will be automatically detected by Hotplug.
We'll have to try that.
And so then, no matter which you have, you can run GTK Pod with it. You can literally go right back and forth. You can plug in one iPod, take off some music, plug in another iPod, and copy the music to it. And it doesn't matter whether it's running USB or it's running FireWire, and it doesn't matter whether it's running the DOS file system or it's running the Mac extended file system.
All right, we have,
and that's all automagical.
That's great. You know what? You're getting into some really cool stuff, and we're going to have you come back on very soon because there's some interesting things I'd like to talk to you about. But we really have to close up the show because our one of our streams ends us off by 10.
Yep.
Warren, I thank you very much, and
yes, thank you.
We'll be contacting you about coming on again soon because there's a lot of things I'd like to talk to you about now that you brought up in the last 3 minutes. That are fantastic.
Thank you, Warren.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Warren. Well, we really appreciate it.
Take care.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you later. I got to get going. So long.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Oh, we got to cut off in 30 seconds of Bin Rev. I guess we'll just play our closing music. Viva love.
Good night, all.
Did we get it?
What was that?
All right.
Show?
Viva night, Cleveland. 75.
What? 75? 75. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Viva love.
All right. Well, that Woo! Was a.
You got 10 seconds. I got to.
That was an awesome interview with.
Yeah, we got to close it.
We got to close this out so that we don't keep you guys all night doing this anyway. Thanks again for listening to Linux Link Tech Show number 75, and here we go. Make sure to listen to us next week.
There you go, Alan. Enjoy it.
Check that out. I even remember to keep the repeat button going on last time. You.
Linux Link Tech Show.